You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
A high fly ball, deep center field. It is gone. Home run. And a huge bat flip to celebrate. All right, Ben, start the show already.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Flippin' Bats, episode 4. I am your host, Ben Verlander. We got a great show for you today. I'm pumped up. We got some storylines to go through, storylines of the week. We got a very special guest joining us in Jeff McNeil of the New York Mets. We got some hotline questions, my favorite part of the show where you guys get to be involved. And of course, the six-tool player of the week to finish it up. But let's get right into it with some storylines from this past week. And I'm going to start with the Padres and the Dodgers series. Now, I've been so excited for this series. I've really anticipated it, and it did not disappoint. It was awesome from start to finish. Every single game was incredible. The first game of the series, Friday night, was perhaps the best game of the year so far. It ended up going into extra innings, and it ended up looking like a blowout. So this is the problem with the West Coast games. If you go to sleep on the East Coast, you watch the first few innings, and you wake up and see the final score, you're like, eh, I didn't even really miss anything. It was a blowout. No, this game was incredible. The entire game was awesome. You go into Saturday, and another great game, a pitcher's duel on Saturday, which the Saturday and Sunday games were most anticipated for me with the pitching matchups. You had Yu Darvish and Clayton Kershaw. You had Blake Snell and Trevor Bauer, and they did not disappoint. The Padres ended up pulling out one on Sunday. The Dodgers ended up pulling out the first two. But honestly, the Padres scored more runs than the Dodgers did all series. So for those of you saying, just what we thought, the Dodgers are way better. Look, I do think the Dodgers are the better team, but the Padres might be the second best team in baseball, and this series was awesome. The Padres outscored the Dodgers, and except for that extra inning in the first game. So in all the nine innings, the Padres scored more runs. So look, this series from start to finish was awesome, and they do it all again this coming weekend for a four-game set, this time in Los Angeles. Next, we got Carlos Rodon of the Chicago White Sox throwing a near-perfect game. So we haven't seen a perfect game since King Felix a long time ago. We almost had it. It got to the ninth inning. It got to the point where I started like recording stuff and getting it ready, what I was going to say. But you know what? He hit a guy on the back foot, barely skimmed it. Guy gets on first base, but he locked back in. He locked back in and nailed down the no-hitter. And, you know, I was really excited for him. I actually got to play. He went to NC State. I went to Old Dominion. We played against each other in college. He didn't throw against us, but I got to know him there. And then, you know, for everything he's gone through injury-wise, he was a big name coming out of the draft, a big prospect for these guys. And it just never really panned out. He came up, made his debut, had some flashes of brilliance, and you know, just injury bug, and after injury kept coming up and piling on top of it. And, you know, it never really panned out for him. And it all led up to the White Sox non-tendering him this past offseason. And, you know, he didn't have a team. And he ends up re-signing with the White Sox, gets back to the major leagues, makes his start. And I mean, here you have it, a no-hitter after everything he's been through. Really awesome, you know. It got to the point where he was throwing 90, 91 in some games, and that's just not him. And, you know, watching him in the ninth inning of that in that no-hitter, he was throwing 99 miles an hour. I was in my living room, pumped up, like pacing back and forth in the room, and I saw he hit 99 to, like, the second or third batter of the inning, and I was like, oh, my God, it was so awesome. So it's really good to see him back, and congrats to Carlos Rodon on the no-hitter. Next storyline of the week, I have to go with the Boston Red Sox. Now, I talked about them in one of the earlier episodes, and I actually went on tape early in the year saying, I believe in the Red Sox this year. I really do. You know, everybody's talking about the Yankees and talking about what the Blue Jays did, and I like what the Blue Jays did. I like the Blue Jays. But everybody was sleeping on this Red Sox team, so I went out on a limb and said, you know what? I think this team's going to be pretty good. You know what they did in the first series of the year? They got swept by the Orioles. So I went on this show and said, you know what? I might have been wrong. They look like the worst team in the league. Well, you know what they've done now? They won 9 straight. They have now taken the lead in the AL East. They have the best record in the American League. They're playing great. I feel great about my prediction. They got the home run cart rolling, one of the best celebrations in all of baseball. Guy hits a homer, comes back in the dugout, hops in the shopping cart, and they push him down to the other end. Who doesn't want to hit a home run now? It's incredible. The Red Sox are rolling. JD Martinez and Xander Bogaerts in the middle of that lineup are both hitting over 350. I mean, this team is rolling, and this is what I thought would the Red Sox would look like. Offensively, just putting up runs in bunches. Monday morning, they played the 11 a.m. Eastern time game. They put up 6 runs on Giolito in the first inning. Lucas Giolito is one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. They came out of the gate swinging in those yellow Boston Marathon uniforms, put up 6 in the first, got the victory. They look great, and they are on top of the AL East. So those are my storylines of the week. So now I wanted to welcome in our special guest, second baseman for the New York Mets, Jeff McNeil. Jeff, what is up, man? Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Of course, man. Hey, so I was watching a bunch of spring training games from this year, and you got hit 8 times in spring training. What was up with all the hit-by-pitches this year?
Yeah, I have no clue. I like to stand on the plate a little bit, but, I think they were just all kind of flukes. A few sliders getting away from some lefties and a few back foot, curveballs. Didn't hit me hard, which is good. I'm still healthy, so that's what matters.
Good. All right. So one thing that we're going to do on the show is we're going to have a trivia right off the bat. There's going to be a bunch of questions. You're going to have 60 seconds to answer. It's all stuff from your career. And we're going to have a Flippin' Bats record book. So, however many, we're going to see who gets the most correct. So right off the top, you ready to roll?
Let's do it.
All right. 60 seconds when I start the first question. Let's go. Ready? Who was your first home run off of?
Tanner Roark.
Okay. Who was your first career hit against?
Phil Hughes.
Who was your first career strikeout against?
Oof. Someone from the Pirates. I have no clue, though.
Where did you bat in the lineup in your first Major League AB?
7th.
Who did you sub in for?
First Major League AB, was 9th. Sorry, it was 9th.
Yeah.
Pinch hit. That's what, yeah.
Who did you pinch hit for?
Phil Evans.
Yes. Who was your last minor league game against?
Reno Aces.
Okay. What number did you make your MLB debut wearing?
68.
Yes. Where was your first away game in the MLB?
Pittsburgh.
Yes. All right. That is it. You got that one. That was good. That was good.
Yeah, no, that was far too bad.
Yeah, so what we have your last minor league game against the Connecticut Tigers, which was a rehab game, though.
Rehab game, that doesn't count.
Yeah, no. I think we should count the Reno Aces.
Yeah, no, for sure it was Reno Aces, drove home and then got the call the next day on off day. So I remember that, pretty well.
So speaking of the minor leagues, I always ask this question off the top. Baseball is so unique in that everybody goes through the minor leagues. You don't start right at the major league. So everybody goes through the system, no matter whether you're drafted first or last in the draft. What is a minor league story that has stuck with you still to this day?
There's one time, so I had a lot of injuries in the minor leagues, missed a couple of years. And the one kind of memory I have that I still gets brought up today is I was playing in Jupiter, and I'm laying on the floor of the locker room. I've got a heat pad on my my leg, a heat pad on my back. I'm hurting. It's just grinding. And one of my teammates took a picture, and that picture's still showing to me today. I still remember it. Every time we go to Jupiter, just laying on the floor right there, getting ready for the game. And it was tough. It was a long journey for me, battling through all those injuries. But I remember that. I remember that day, still today. And lets me know that, I went through, a long, tough journey, but I made it.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you about that, because we got to know each other fairly well in the minor leagues and played against each other quite a bit. And I actually remember one season when I was still playing in Florida. And you had moved up, but you had just missed a full year, basically. You came back, and this was your first game back after a pretty serious injury. And I remember I got on second base, and we talked for a second during a pitching change. And just like seeing the look on your face, finally being back out there after so long and so many injuries and working your way back, I remember seeing it. And it was pretty cool because I knew how much it meant to you. What have you done to really focus and make a change and focus on your body to prevent stuff like that from happening? You can never really prevent it, but.
Yeah, no. If you remember me pretty well, I was, 160 pounds, pretty small in the minor. And, I made it, a big point to, gain weight and gain strength and, be able to change that, power aspect of my game. And, I did that in an off season. I absolutely crushed it in the gym and, eating tons of food and, put on all that weight. But I think I did it a little bit too quickly. And, my body just didn't really adjust to it. And, I ended up getting hurt. But I think once my, body adjusted to the new weight, it's been so much easier to, stay healthy. I'm doing everything I can in the gym right now to, maintain, my weight and, we got a great training staff that, keeps me healthy. So, it's a long season, but, you gotta take care of your body and, you gotta stay healthy.
Yeah. Well, one thing that, you and I have kind of kept contact through, DMs or whatever it may be since we played against each other. And one thing that I didn't know that in hindsight, I feel like an idiot for, you posted something on Instagram not too long ago. It was like your golf swing or a scorecard or something. And I said, like, dang, dude, like actually looking like you know what you're doing out there. Turns out you're like a scratch golfer. You're ridiculous. You almost went and played in college. And your response basically was like not making me feel so bad, but you're like, yeah, dude, I'm pretty good. So tell me about, so you played golf, you played, you were stud in basketball in high school. Tell me about playing all those different sports growing up.
Golf was, one of my main sports. When I got to high school, our high school golf team was incredible. So, I wanted to play golf, wanted to play college golf. So, I went that route and, didn't really, pan out for me, didn't really have, too many scholarships, or opportunity to play at the next level. So, started playing baseball again, started playing really well, in high school on a travel ball scout team that I was on and, was lucky enough to, get a scholarship, to go play at Long Beach State. So, it worked out. Baseball was kind of my plan B in high school, but it ended up being a pretty amazing plan B.
I would say it's worked out pretty good for you. So where, I know you still are a big golfer. I think you just got off the golf course. What's your favorite course you've ever played, and what is a course that you're like dying to get on? It's like a bucket list course for you.
Favorite course. I got to play Cypress Point this off season. Pretty incredible. Basically, all those golf courses on the Monterey Peninsula are, fantastic. Took a trip up there, got to play, Pebble, Spyglass, Spanish Bay, and Monterey Peninsula Country Club. So, you know, got to play all those. Those are, you know, pretty incredible. But I think, you know, bucket list course, you know, definitely Augusta. You know, that's the dream. That's every dream. You know, whatever I have to do to get on there, you know, I'd do it. So, you know, that's number one. If I ever get the opportunity to play there, I think it'd be a dream come true.
Dude, I just played Cyprus last year, like a year ago in February. I played Cyprus, and I actually saw, I had never seen a hole in one in person, and I saw my buddy, and I was playing with my buddy and my brother the day before the Pebble Beach tournament. My buddy hit one, and then the next day, the start of the tournament over at Spyglass, Victor Hovland had one in the actual tournament, and I was on the tee box for it. But that whole area is so, so freaking beautiful, man.
No, you can't beat the Monterey Peninsula.
Yeah. So you talked about playing in college at Long Beach State. You never in your college career had a home run there. And then, you know, now fast forward to the big leagues, and I wouldn't say you're labeled a power hitter, but you got some pop. You certainly got some pop. What was there? Was it a swing change? Was it something? Is it you getting into the gym? What was that?
I think it was, you know, me getting in the gym. You know, I've always been a good hitter. I've always been able to, you know, barrel the ball. But when I barreled it, it didn't go too far. So, you know, I think, you know, getting in the gym, you know, definitely helped that. And, you know, those balls that I barreled, you know, started to go over the fence. You know, I saw that, you know, change. I think we were playing you guys that first game back. I think I hit a home run first at bat. You know, that's something I never did when I was in the Florida State League. So, you know, just to be able to see, you know, the changes, you know, so, you know, fast, it was nice.
That's it. So that was kind of the turning point. So you went through this kind of complete overhaul with your body and getting yourself to where you wanted to be. And your body wasn't ready to do that yet. And it kind of, you know, broke down on you. But then when you worked your way back and got yourself into a position, your first game back is when you're like, I got some pop now.
I hit that home run, you know, I was feeling really good. I think I had a fantastic game that day and, you know, was playing actually really well. And actually, unfortunately, you know, I ended up getting injured a week or two later. I kind of hurt my quad the day before, but, you know, I really hurt it the next day. It was when I hit a home run and was rounding first base and, my quad just gave out. So unfortunately I got hurt, hitting a home run, but, you know, the power has definitely been there since, you know, I put on that weight. It's pretty nice to see.
So now you're in the big leagues. You're going to be the second baseman for the Mets as you have been in the past, but it's going to look a little bit different this year. You guys had arguably the biggest signing of the offseason, and your double play combo up the middle is the best shortstop in baseball, if not one of the best. What has that been like, having him in spring training and so far this year working with him up the middle?
You know, it's been fantastic. You know, Francisco's, he's great. You know, just learning from him, he knows the game, you know, extremely well. And, you know, great teammate, you know, great to be around every single day. You know, he's, you know, that guy you see on TV every day, you know, smiling, having fun, you know, just loving the game. So, you know, it's been, you know, fantastic to, you know, learn from him. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to, you know, playing up the middle with him.
I always wonder, because when there's a big, like, a big trade between, you know, with a team, whether it be a pitcher or a catcher, somebody will typically reach out to the other person before it's go time. But I've always wondered, like, you know, you two are going to be working a lot up the middle, and it's important to have that chemistry. Was there any contact between the two of you before you headed down to spring training, or was it, is that when it first started?
You know, it was kind of in spring training. I knew him a little bit from, I met him in Cleveland at the All-Star game. So I knew him a little bit. We spent like one of the first nights, you know, hanging out a little bit. So, you know, I got to know him a little bit then. But yeah, he reached out, you know, just kind of some group text with, you know, all the infielders. So, you know, there's a little bit of communication there, but yeah, no, we've been, you know, communicating well. You know, once we got to spring training, you know, getting to, you know, learn how, you know, the other person plays and, you know, double play feeds where we all want it and, you know, all that good stuff. But, you know, the communication, you know, has been great between us.
Another thing you guys did this offseason is you now have a new owner. Steve Cohen is the new owner of the Mets. And, you know, typically that wouldn't be as big of a deal as this is, because he's so unique from the other 29. He's very active on Twitter. He asks people questions. He answers questions. What has that been like? Has there been a trickle down to the locker room?
It's just, you know, kind of a, you know, culture change, and, you know, it's been fantastic to, you know, have Steve around, and, you know, he's been down to spring training, you know, and interacting, you know, watching the team. So, you know, it's been great. And, you know, he's going to do, you know, fantastic things for this team. You know, he's a, you know, diehard Mets fan, which is awesome. So, you know, he wants the best team out on the field, and, you know, he's going to do whatever it takes to win.
It certainly appears he's going to do whatever it takes to win. He's signed, he got acquired Lindor, McCann, May, a bunch of huge pieces for you guys. But the biggest thing, in my opinion, that he has done for the New York Mets thus far is he is bringing back the black jerseys. I am so pumped for that. Are you guys excited for those?
Yeah, absolutely. I used to love the black jerseys. They're clean. They look good. It's a lot of fun. You know, I got Pete Alonso. He's been, you know, wanting those back ever since he got called up to the big leagues. So, you know, we're all super excited to have him back. And, you know, we can't wait. I know we're not going to wear them a whole lot, but, you know, for those nights that we do, it's going to be a lot of fun.
You haven't worn them, correct? They've been gone for two. So you haven't, right?
Yeah, they've been gone a little too long. You know, I never got to wear them.
I feel like they're like the most talked about. Like, it's not just Mets fans that wanted these black jerseys back. Everybody wanted them back. And when Cohen first got on Twitter and said, "Hey, it's me. I'm the new owner of the Mets. What do you guys want to see?" It wasn't like sign this person. It was bring back the black jerseys. So I'm super pumped for those. And I did see it's not going to be a normal part of the rotation, correct? You guys are going to be select few.
Yeah, I think select few games. Not sure exactly when, but I know it's a select few games. We'll be breaking those out.
So a lot of there have been a lot of new signings, as we just talked about, and you guys are playing in my opinion, the best division in all of baseball. The NL East, pretty much from top to bottom, is going to be really, really good. And there's a lot of young studs and a lot of firepower. And you guys have your fair share, that is for sure. So what is it going to be like this year for you playing in that division? Are you excited to play against, you know, every single night is going to be, you know, the best in the league coming at you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love the NL East. You know, all I really know is the NL East, you know, ever since I got called up. So, you know, I've been playing in this division for, you know, a long time. And, you know, I think it's the best division in baseball. You know, every single night is, you know, it's a fight. It's a grind. You know, there's five teams that, you know, are very good in this division. You know, everyone, you know, kind of counts out the Marlins. And I think they're a, you know, very scrappy, you know, team. They play, you know, the right way.
They made the playoffs last year.
Playoffs last year, you know, look, I mean, they're a sneaky team, you know, their pitching's, you know, very good. So, you know, there's no easy wins in this division. You know, it's going to be a battle to the end, but, you know, I like our team a lot. You know, we only got better from last year. So, you know, hopefully, you know, the first goal is, you know, get back to the playoffs and, you know, anything can happen from there.
Yep. I agree. So, one thing that you now use is, or I don't even know if it's now used, but I know you use a knobless bat. And I've fooled around with knobless bats in the cage, and I just can't do it. It's so difficult for me. It's the weirdest feeling in the world. When did you get into that? When did you start using a knobless bat?
I think it was in 2015. Started using it a little bit. You know, right before I got hurt. You know, started using it. You know, really liked how it felt. You know, it was just a very balanced bat. It's kind of like a, you know, M110, you know, very balanced. You know, felt good. My hands just didn't happen to have a knob. You know, not by choice, but it was just the first one handed to me. So, you know, started, you know, using it and, you know, loved it and been using it ever since. But, you know, actually been, you know, kind of tinkering a little bit, you know, spring training. I was using, you know, Pete Alonso's bat a little bit. You know, felt really good. You know, it's got a little bit bigger barrel. So, you know, just a little bit, know more behind it, but you know, we'll see what I go with this year.
Did somebody suggest that to you? Like, was it somebody on the Mets that was like, dude, I use a novice flat bat, try it out?
No, it was our hitting coordinator.
Okay.
He had one and, kind of had a, box of them in the back. He's like, here, you want to try this? And the first one I ever swung was like a 35. And, felt great. Just choked up on it. That's why I, still choke up on it to today. And, had a decent sized barrel. So, as long as I connected on it, the ball jumped.
Yep.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Flying Squirrel. Tell me how that came about. How did that nickname come about?
That was in college. I had a teammate. I used to play. I played a lot of outfield in college. So,
yeah.
I was making some diving catches, and one of my teammates started calling me the Flying Squirrel out there, and wasn't a huge fan of it. And then one of my teammates found my roommate actually in rookie ball. He found out and. Brought it into the minor league clubhouse, and I was hoping it kind of got left in the minor league clubhouse. It didn't. It made its way to the major league clubhouse, and it is what it is. But I'm enjoying it, and learning to love it.
You were that close to escaping it. Your rookie ball roommate found it out, and now it's with you today in the big leagues.
Yeah, no, and then it's stuck with me ever since. So just enjoying it now.
So one thing we want to do on this show is create a rule book. All right. So everybody that we have on, we're gonna put together a rule book of something that they come up with. So what I want to ask you is, if you were commissioner for a day, what is one rule that you would take away or add to help grow the game for the audience?
So I'm a guy who likes to beat the shift. I mean, teams will shift me, but I enjoy hitting the ball the other way. I know I can beat the shift when I have to. I think if there was no shifting, I think it would, improve. There'd be much more action. Those big pull hitters, they can go ahead and just let it rip and, shoot balls, through the 4 and 6 hole. I think that would be good. I know they are trying it in, the minor leagues this year. So, yeah. We'll see how it goes, but, me as a second baseman, a few times in spring training, I was playing basically right field and just got, 112 mile an hour line drives right at me that were, routine plays. So, there's no real action, the guy's out at first, but the guy, the guy made a good swing, but, nothing really happened. So, if I wasn't standing there, that's, stuff, much, much more action, I think, if there is no shifting, but, we'll see what happens there.
So I'm personally super pumped up to get back to 162 game season. What happened last year, the country shut down. There wasn't baseball for a while. And there was an MLB The Show Players League that you partook in, and you were the rep for the Mets. First question, how did you do in that tournament? I don't remember.
I think I got third. I lost in the semifinals. I lost to Blake Snell. So we had a good little matchup. I think I won the first, then he won the next two. So it was best two or three in the semifinals. But had a good showing. It was fun. Got to play MLB The Show during the pandemic. So wasn't all too bad.
Yeah. So that's another thing you and I have discussed. We're gonna have to play at some point. We've had Rhys Hoskins on, and we're going to play each other, and he said he could beat me, but that seems doubtful. But I feel like you're going to be a better matchup. I know you're good at the game. I know you stream as well, and I know you've streamed the show. So we're definitely going to have to get our game in at some point and see who the better player is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you just let me know when, and we can do it.
All right, sounds good. So I want to ask you some questions. We ask these three questions to everybody. Some career moments. So I'm going to ask you three questions pertaining to your career. First would be, what was your welcome to the MLB moment?
Definitely, my debut. I got a pinch hit in the, I think it was the eighth inning. I was walking to the plate and, just to hear the Citi Field crowd, they knew I was getting called up and they knew who I was. You know, they were following me in the minor league. So, just to kind of hear the buzz in the stadium, when I was walking to the plate, it was, pretty incredible. I just, stood there kind of looked around, enjoyed it.
Took it in.
And, I soaked it all in. And, I'm a first pitch swinger. So, swing at the first pitch and, was lucky enough to get a, fastball, I think about as middle as it can get. And, drove up the middle. So, once I got on first base, I knew I was in the big leagues and, hopefully, here to stay for a long time.
What's your most memorable play that you've made on the field?
I would either say, defensively, it was either the catch. I made a diving catch in Fenway Park, in short, right field. It was a, all out diving catch. That was a lot of fun. And, to do it in Fenway Park, it was pretty cool. Or the catch I made in Chicago where, I went into the net, that was a pretty unique catch. And, that's the one that, everyone seems to talk about.
What is a moment that stands out to you with teammates that has taken place off of the field?
Oh man. We have too many. We're always going to dinner and, having a good time. There was one dinner. It wasn't during the season. It was during our fan fest in January. We went to Salt Bay's restaurant in New York. And it was like a Saturday night and I think there was eight of us. It was me, Dom, Pete, Nimmo, and JD. And, it was just amazing dinner, a lot of fun, a lot of good stories, a lot of dancing and, partying, in the restaurant. And it was just a fantastic time and, just great time with the guys.
Who's the best dancer of that group?
Oh, yeah, I think I got to go. I want to say Dom.
Whoa!
I think Dom's got some moves I think Dom can move. Oh no, sorry. Actually, no. I've changed my answer. I gotta go. Pete. Pete's got a fantastic video. Him dancing at the Florida Gator game, and it was great. Yeah, no, for sure.
Oh my God!
Take a look at that video.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to check out that video. Was Salt Bay? So it was his restaurant. Was he there? Like, did he do the thing?
Yeah, he wasn't there, but they go around, they do the whole thing, and the DJ was, DJ was awesome that night, and we got some good videos from that night.
That's cool. So I wanted to circle back. I had a feeling the play in Chicago might be one of your most memorable plays on the field. I wanted to ask you about that play because the netting hasn't always gone all the way down the line. It still doesn't in a lot of stadiums. So. That was kind of new, but you made the catch running into foul territory, not a lot of room for you. And then you jumped and leapt and got caught up in the net. Were you aware of that when you jumped? What was going through your head right before that?
When you hit the ball, I knew it was going to be, pretty close to, the fence and the netting. And I knew it was a low, very low, a wall. I knew there was a net as well. I wasn't sure, what was going to happen if I ran into that net. But I was more worried, I think, about my leg, catching it and, running into, the low wall. So, You know, right when I caught it, I thought it was best, you know, just jump and get over this wall. And I guess whatever happens. And, you know, luckily I knew the net was there. Luckily it kind of shot me back, into play. It could have been much, much worse, but, it was, definitely one of the most memorable plays of, my career. And, it was a lot of fun doing it too.
One way or the other, it's going to be better than not doing it and taking out your legs. Either there's the net that is there and it's going to save you, or the fans always seem to like grab you when you jump into the stands. So one way or the other, it was going to be a better result than just taking your knees and blowing your knees out.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just hoping, we get a lot of Mets fans on the road. So I'm hoping if I, jump over the wall there, they're going to catch me.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much, dude, for joining me today. I'm so excited to watch the Mets this year. I'm excited for you this season. Good luck to you guys the rest of the way. Thank you so much for coming on. Hope to have you on again sometime soon, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Of course, man. See ya. All right, I just wanted to thank Jeff McNeil for joining me. He was the guinea pig for the trivia section that we're going to start. We're going to ask every guest some trivia questions, and we're going to kind of have like a grade book for them and see who can do the best, see what grade they get. So Jeff, thank you so much for joining me. I really enjoyed that interview, and I wanted to swing it right into the voicemail questions, my favorite part of the show where you guys get to be a part of it and send in your hot mail questions, anything you have that you want to be answered, any hot takes you have, any burning questions, any fiery, passionate, you hate your team questions, whatever it may be. So make sure you're calling 213-537-9339 to get those questions in. So Rick, hit me with the first one.
Hey, Ben, love the show. It's George from Richmond, Virginia. One question for you. Is Brian Cashman on the hot seat?
Ooh, is Brian Cashman of the Yankees on the hot seat? I would say, look, so the Yankees are struggling, and they have the worst record in baseball, which is shocking. They have in the American League, they have the worst record, which is shocking. On paper, the New York Yankees have, I don't think it's far-fetched to say, the best team on paper in the American League, if not, a top three. I would say they have the best team on paper in the American League. And that is Brian Cashman's job, to put the best team on the field. I think he's done that. So where's the problem? Here's the problem. The Yankees are playing bad everywhere, offensively, defensively. They have Gerrit Cole and Jordan Montgomery pitching, but beyond them, pitching's not great either. They're not doing any part of the game well. So if I'm asked who is on the hot seat, because I don't think it's Cashman, I got to go with Aaron Boone. The team on paper that he has to work with is good, and they're just not playing good in no facet of the game. So I believe Aaron Boone is on the hot seat because, look, this team needs to be winning. New York will be calling for heads soon. Look, it's still early. I know that. It's still early. Every team goes through rough stretches, but it looks really, really bad when you go through a rough stretch to start the year, and 2 weeks into the year, you're in dead last place in the division that – features the Orioles, which, let's be honest, they're on the up, but they're not very good. To be in dead last place in the AL East is not a good thing, and Aaron Boone is the one that I believe is going to be on the hot seat here soon. Let's get to the next question.
Hey, Ben, this is Ryan, big fan of the pod. I was curious what you think about the latest rulings about moving the mound back 12 inches. I'm curious about your thoughts if it's really what baseball should move to get more action in the game. I personally think it's not a great idea, and I think it'll potentially lead to more pitchers' arms getting hurt, but would love to hear your feedback. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you for the question. He asked about moving the mound back a foot. This has been talked about quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. They're experimenting with that in an independent league. Look, I was a hitter. I hit professionally. This rule seemingly is to help hitters, pitchers' arms are getting better. Everyone's throwing 95 to 100. This is to help the batter, right? This is to level the playing field, get more balls put in play. So from a hitter's perspective, you know, it's to help a hitter. I played professionally as an outfielder. I hit. I hate this rule. I hate the potential of moving the mound back. Here's why. I grew up my entire life playing on a field at a, you know, not at a young age because the mound's only 40 feet away, whatever it may be. Once you get old enough in middle school, you move to a field with 90 feet bases and a pitcher's mound that is 60 feet 6 inches away. I have been training my entire life to hit a pitcher that's standing 60 feet 6 inches away from me. My entire life. I've everything I do, my timing. Look, this is what it comes down to. And I didn't think about this until recently when somebody was talking to me about this. There were times when I would be playing pro ball and facing a guy throwing 100 miles an hour. And it's literally to the point where I have to time my blinking. I'm in the box trying to get my timing down. And I know what I need to do. I know when I need to get started. I know how I need to get into position. And I know down to the millisecond when I need to blink. This is going to throw off everything. Like he asked in the question or said, he thinks injuries could come about. I agree. Moving pitchers a foot further back? Yeah. Yeah. Injuries. But from a batter's perspective, the one that's supposed to help, it's not going to help. Look, pitchers are going to, the pitch will be coming in slower. I guess would be, you know, what their thought is look, instead of everybody throwing 100 now, like by the time it gets to you, it'll be less. Look, I don't care. At the professional level, everybody can hit 100 mile an hour fastball. I could hit 100 mile an hour fastball. The problem comes, you know, when you get sliders, your mentality, you know, pitch location. It's not the velocity. And even if it is, I've trained for this my whole life. This is what I've trained for since I was 12 years old. 60 feet, 6 inches away. Not 61 feet, 6 inches. Not whatever it may be. This is a terrible idea. Terrible. This just gets me fired up because, thinking about it from a hitter's perspective, even, like I said, I trained my whole life 60 feet, 6 inches away. And to move it back, it throws off everything. So I am not a fan of it. I actually think it's a terrible idea. And I don't foresee it getting to the big leagues, but I really hope it doesn't because, yeah, terrible, terrible idea. But I want to transition into my sixth tool player of the week. This week, it is Mookie Betts of the Los Angeles Dodgers. So we talked about earlier the series down in San Diego this week, the Padres and the Dodgers. Well, the Saturday game, which was the first of a great pitching matchup, Kershaw and Darvish. This is a 2-0 game going into the ninth inning. Padres have runners on second and third, bottom of the ninth, two outs. Line drive into the gap. Looks for sure, like a game-tying double, maybe a single, but for sure both runs are going to score. Mookie Betts comes flying out of nowhere, makes the catch of the year. And that's not an exact, this is the catch of the year to this point. And look, you know, this isn't a stats-based award. There's no real definition for what this award is about. But I can point to it, and it's right there. When he sits up, catches it, bangs his chest, everyone in the world gets fired up. Look, I'm getting goosebumps just looking at it. It was so sick. Mookie Betts flying out of nowhere, making the catch of the year, beating his chest, energy everywhere. Best catch of the year, and that is why Mookie Betts is this week's sixth tool player of the week. And speaking of Mookie Betts, this week we saw Jackie Robinson Day, and Mookie Betts is one of over 200 players who donated his game check from that day to the Players Alliance. So a really cool gesture by Mookie. And I actually wanted to talk for a second about Jackie Robinson Day. It's a really cool day for me. I get emotional watching it. I grew up playing this game since I was young, and I get to play Division I baseball. But it changes when you get to professional baseball. It really does. I go into a clubhouse, and for the first time, I'm surrounded by I'm surrounded by guys my age, that guys my age, guys that aren't my age. I'm surrounded by white people. I'm surrounded by black people. I'm surrounded by Latino players. It's all of it. And I played for 5 years and built some of the most incredible relationships of my life with these guys. And when I sit back and watch Jackie Robinson Day happen and watch everyone out there take the field wearing number 42, it's emotional, man. It really is. Because that wouldn't have happened. Some of the best memories of my life, sharing a locker room with the guys that I did, would not have happened if it wasn't for Jackie Robinson. We wouldn't have guys like my Six Tool Player of the Week, Mookie Betts, playing baseball. We wouldn't have guys like Fernando Tatis Jr. playing baseball. And that was all because of what Jackie did. He broke the color barrier. So when that day comes around every year, Jackie Robinson Day, when every single person takes the field wearing number 42, man, it means a lot to me. It's a really, really cool and a really emotional day. And that's why I got Jackie on my locker over here. You know, I got a few lockers up here, and Jackie Robinson was one of the ones that I wanted to have in there because of what he means to the game of baseball and the game that I love so much and the game that I know you guys love so much. So thank you, Jackie Robinson. And this week we saw another Jackie Robinson Day come and go, and everybody wearing number 42. Just a really cool day. So that does it for this week's episode of Flippin' Bats. Make sure, one, you get your voicemail questions in, and two, make sure you're following everywhere. Make sure you're following on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. The show is on video on YouTube and all socials. So make sure you follow those. Make sure you're subscribing. Hit that subscribe button. Rate it 5 stars if you think it deserves 5 stars, which hopefully you do. But another good episode in the books. Wanted to thank Jeff McNeil for joining me. And thank you guys again for tuning into this week's episode of Flippin' Bats. Until next time, peace.
It's a blowout, 8th inning, 10-3. Bases are loaded for Verlander, who waits on a real pitch. He swings, and it's a high fly ball, deep center field. It is gone! Home run! And a huge bat flip to celebrate.